Hey, one of the singers just said, book 'em, brother, book 'em. Like, amen. Okay. I appreciate Georgia and how you feel about the police. That's awesome. So good morning, Northview. I'm so glad to be here. I can't even really speak. I apologize in advance for anyone who will encounter me in the fellowship. I'm a pretty quiet guy, actually. Or if you had encountered me on the way and I was sitting, I told Jim I want to nerd out over my notes. And so he took me to a back office, a boardroom somewhere back there. And a brother walked in. He didn't even know who I was. I think church had started. He just kind of looked at me and said, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm all right. And he said, you okay? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And he just left me alone. I was like, amen. I appreciate a sheepdog who watches over the flock, whoever that brother was. I am like that. I would have asked me the same question. So love you, brother, whoever you are. So I want to preach a message today that's near and dear to my heart. It's called A Life Impacted by the One. It's a story about my second favorite character in the Bible, who is the Apostle Peter. I love Peter. I feel Peter. I feel Peter-ish in my life. I feel like there will be times when I do and say things that the people around me go, what was he thinking? And that's been the way in my whole life, because I'm being a quiet guy. My inner life is very rich. My thought life is very rich. It's explosive. I think about things a long time, and I remember almost all of my impactful experiences. Word for word, smell for smell, sight for sight. I can remember where I was standing and the kind of shoes I was wearing. I don't know why it's shoes. I think because I kind of looked down. But I can remember about every single one of those experiences in my life. So I want to tell you about my life. And I want to give it a little bit of context. Because as I talk about Peter's life, I want to talk about someone who was super impactful for me. Peter's life is marked by Jesus' mentorship. It is all about Jesus' impact on this rough and tumble dude named Peter. And so that has been a big theme in my life, is mentorship. I've always sought it out. I've always wanted someone older than me, or smarter than me, or more spiritual than me, to guide me. I've wanted that even when I didn't know I wanted that. And my life has been really impacted. I'm so grateful for my older brother, Van Owens, for a brother in Boston named John Martin, for Jim Lenihan. He's in this message. Jim taught me how to catch a baseball in a mitt. That's funny because I was about 33, 34 years old. It's for real. When this lesson happened, we were in the ministry together, we were playing softball, and the ball would come to me, and everybody would say, go to first base, because Daryl's going to miss. And Jim enjoyed that until he was on my team one day. I'm just telling the truth. And he said to me, brother, do you know how to catch in a mitt? And I said, no, I've never done that before. And he said, why have you never done that before? I said, I grew up without a dad. And he said, I'll teach you. Come out tomorrow, and I'll teach you. And I learned, and I'm actually pretty good at it now. I got some other things I want to spend some time with you about, though. All right, but, so I believe in this mentorship thing deeply. It's not just surface for me. It's not just lip service. I believe in it deeply. And I've actually done it my whole life. I've given back my whole life. When I was a very young police officer, I started a karate class in the neighborhood that I worked in. That class started with, I taught it for free. That class started with 5 kids, and it grew to 105 kids. Wow. In a couple of months, it was crazy. I signed up to be a big brother. And that was interesting. The organization and I had some moral disagreements, so I separated from that. But I signed up to be a big brother when I was 16 years old. I signed up for Big Brothers when I was 16 years old. I didn't like the way they ran the organization, so I left at 16. In church, before my daughters were teenagers, I signed up to mentor the teen ministry. I just wanted to help lead the teen boys. I felt like they were going the wrong way. I wanted to get in and help. Right now, my wife, as an elder, along with my wife, we shepherd the campus ministry in downtown. And we do so because we wanted to. And wanted to help. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's how most of life with me goes. I have big ideas, and then I just do them. Or now I've learned to talk to Barbara a lot first. But we did that because I wanted to. And then there's the Teen Academy program that Jim talks about. We started that program because one day a group of kids from the inner city came through on a tour, and I just saw something that I could give. And in that program, as of today, we've been going for 10 years, we've impacted 350 teenagers in the city of Boston. It's gotten the attention of the police commissioner and the mayor. It's gotten the attention of benevolent rich folks who've given us a lot of money. And it's gotten the attention of cities and towns outside of Boston all over the country because it's a unique model. So in my life, and I was talking to my wife this morning, I'm happy turning 54 today. I'm happy turning 54 today because I believe I've had some impact. I believe my life has mattered. I believe I've done some good, and I'm confident that I'm not done. There's lots of impact in my life from both sides. I've been deeply impacted because I open my eyes and remember. And as we talk about this idea of impact and mentoring, I have a simple formula for those who are younger or older who want a mentor and what to look for. I always say, look for an amazing role model. Not just good, but amazing. Someone who amazes you. It can be a very simple thing about them that amazes you, but make your mentor amazing to you. It makes it really much easier to follow. It made it easier for me to stand there and talk to Jim Lenihan about catching a baseball because he was a stud on the softball field. I was like, this guy's amazing, so I'm going to listen. And much more, there's much more about Jim than sports, but that was what caught my attention in the first place. Make sure that your mentor is honest and real, even when it hurts. A good mentor will tell you what they don't like about you. A good mentor will point out your wrongs, will pull you aside and talk to you. And also, find a mentor who wholeheartedly believes in a dream for your future. So today I'm going to talk to you about Peter. And he's my favorite character, one of my favorite characters besides Jesus. And I also want to talk to you about my first mentor, who I met even before I was a Christian. He's my first karate teacher named Richard Scott. I want to talk to you about, so as I talk to you about Peter, I'm also going to talk to you about 15 amazing years of my life, before I met Jim, before I met my wife, but as I was a boy, being shaped into the man I am. So first I'll tell you a little bit about my background before I dive in. So I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. Exactly 50. Who's from Little Rock? That doesn't happen in Boston. It don't happen in Boston. What's up, man? How you doing? All right. So I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas, and we quickly moved away after I was born. We moved to Boston before I was even 1 year old. And my father, Joe, we called him Joe, he owned a dry cleaners in the city of Boston that was also doing some questionable, illegal things on the side. And when I was about 7 years old, my father was taken to prison. He was whisked away and taken to prison, and we never really lived with him again. Because on my 9th birthday, exactly 45 years ago, my dad was murdered. So there I was fatherless and confused in the inner city. I was a boy who desperately wanted to be a man and to learn how to be a man, but I had nobody to teach me. Fortunately, in those days, there was something going on. This was the 70s, if you've done the math. In those days, there was something going on, is that karate class was actually very cool. I know some of you young people are like, it's not that cool now. But it was really cool when I was a kid. You know, that we've got sitcoms that kind of make fun of karate classes now, and people like to laugh at Dwight Schrute, if you know who that is, taking karate, and Frasier on Seinfeld taking karate. So people like to do that. But in the 70s, it was super cool. And so I wanted to find a karate class. So I did. I found a karate class in the basement of a Baptist church in the inner city. The price of the karate class was $5 a year. And the price of the uniform was $15. And if you couldn't afford the uniform, which I couldn't, my sensei would buy it for you. I remember seeing him for the first time. And he's a bit shorter than I am now. He's a bit heavy. He was a bit heavier than I am now. He was a former college football player at Boston University, and he was like soul music to hear his voice. He had a high pitch and a low pitch. He had this really neat afro and this Fu Manchu mustache. And he was so cool. And he was so big. And he was amazingly fast and strong and spiritual. And when I first met him and I did my first class, I said, I'm good at this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to stay here. I'm never going to miss a class. And for 15 years, I never missed a class. One year there was a blizzard in Boston. I know you can't relate necessarily. But one year there was a blizzard in Boston, and it happened on Christmas Eve. And it occurred to my sensei that he needed to drive to the school because he knew I would be there out in front of the church waiting for him. And I was, and class was canceled, and he picked me up and took me home. Let's talk about when Peter met his mentor. Open your Bibles to Luke chapter 5 with me, please. Luke chapter 5, I'm going to read a little chunk of scripture here, verses 1 to 11. Now, I'll give you some fair warning. I know and I've seen that it's been a fairly tearful day. I was just telling my wife, because of how I'm built and what I've been through, I experience my emotions currently. So if I feel something that I'm telling you about, I'm just going to feel it. And I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm just going to feel it because of the way I'm built with this rich inner life. My emotional memories are very current. I apologize in advance. Okay, so Luke chapter 5, verse 1. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, with people crowding around him, listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and he asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon Peter answered, Master, we've worked all night hard, and I haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I'll let down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come to help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. This is my favorite little verse right here coming up. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so James and John and the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." So they pulled their boats on shore and left everything and began to follow him. My thought was, I'm going to be with this guy. I'm never going to miss a Wednesday or a Friday or a Saturday morning ever. And I didn't. Peter's thought was, on meeting the Lord, I am never going to leave you. I'm going to leave everything else and follow you. Jesus is a great mentor. And when we find Jesus, there's something about finding Jesus. Now, I had known about this karate class, but when my teacher first addressed me, I said, "He knows me. He understands me." And I think when Peter heard Jesus and saw Jesus, said, "I want to get into your boat. I want to be with you." This might not have been Peter's first meeting of Jesus, but I think it was the first time that Jesus talked to Peter about Peter. Great mentors do that. Great mentors do that. So the first thing that happened to me in my relationship with my sensei was that he amazed me. I was amazed at him. So one day, we were going to a karate. I've been there, a couple of years. I got really proficient. The group of friends that I joined with all quit, but I stayed because I needed this. And so we were on a demonstration team, and we were going out to a demonstration in the suburbs because karate was cool back then. We were going out to a demonstration, and we were going to break boards and fight and do forms, and it was going to be awesome. But my teacher had just had his first daughter. And so he said, "Before we go," we got in this little van. He said, "Before we go, I want to take you by the house and I want to introduce you to Kristen." That's his first daughter's name. And he said, and we said, "Okay, sensei, let's go." So we went to the house. He runs in. And as he's coming out, he's so excited that he's coming out to show us his daughter. He stumbled at the top of his stairs. And the guy was about to fall down the stairs. And he tucked and did a perfect barrel roll. His daughter never touched the stairs. And he popped up to his feet and he ran over to the van and he goes, "Guys, this is Kristen." And we were like, "Whoa, who is this guy?" And he said, "Don't tell my wife. I'll be right back." And then he went in the house and he brought his daughter in the house. And that amazed me, but you know what amazed me more? There was something more amazing to me about this story. In my family, there is no man who has stayed with his wife and daughter, with his wife and children for life, except for me. Listen to that again. In my family, there is not one man, by their own fault or by some other fault, who has stayed with their wife and their children except for me. And I learned it from Sensei. And I said, "I'm staying." I was a boy. I didn't know who Barbara was, but I said to myself in watching him, "I'm staying," and I have, praise God. And I've been able to imitate that, and I have two amazing, beautiful daughters who are wonderful young women, and I'm very grateful, but I've been a good father, and I stayed. Let's read when Jesus amazed Peter. Matthew 14, starting in verse 22. You know these stories? I know you do. This is a fairly simple sermon, but I want you to be encouraged when you want to be a mentor or when someone offers to mentor you. That's why I'm preaching this. Matthew 14, starting in verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into a boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. This is another episode of Jesus preaching. After he had dismissed them, he went on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. And we can pause there for a minute, Christians, and say, wow, it's amazing. We kind of talk about it all the time. Jesus walked on water, and we say it all the time. But Jesus walked on water. Wow. Jesus walked on water. He didn't, I saw your faces when I said, Sensei fell down the stairs. And you're all like, whoa. And then I told you, he popped up on his feet, and you're all like, yay. But Jesus walked on water. Jesus walked on water. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost. That would have been me. Ah, it's a ghost. They said and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. And then I love Peter. Lord, if it is you, tell me to come out to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat and walked on water and came towards Jesus. Let's stop right there, Christians, for a second. Peter walked on water. It should blow your mind. I don't know how many times you've read it. I don't know if it's become a cliche to you, but Peter walked on water. And he walked on water because he asked Jesus if he could. And Jesus said, come on. Come on. Let's go. I raised my daughters. I am so fired up that I raised my daughters. I'm so fired up that I stayed with my daughters. I'm so excited that my daughters wanted to become disciples. I'm so honored. My mind is blown. I learned it when I was a boy. And I saw my sensei and I said, I want to do that. Don't discount the value of mentorship. Don't do it. If some of us can bristle towards mentorship. Hey, Daryl, come here. I want to talk to you. What do you want to talk to me for, man? Don't touch me. Right? Some of us can bristle towards the idea of mentorship. But God may be putting someone in your life. I firmly believe that Richard Scott was put into my life so I could find Jesus. I firmly believe it. I firmly believe that Richard Scott saved my life. I firmly believe it. You cannot convince me otherwise, that I would not, I should have been, I was telling Jim and Helen last night, I should have been what my unfortunate father was. I should have been a drug dealer. I should have been. I was, in fact, being groomed to be a drug dealer. I should have been. I should have been a pimp like they were, like my fathers and uncles were. But I raised my daughters. And I'm fired up. I'm fired up. What about you? What do you have or what do you need that someone else in this room can either give or that you can give? You know, there are times when I really needed my sensei to encourage me. I really needed him. There was once, now a few years later, I had actually gotten to be pretty good at martial arts. I was pretty good. I was the New England Grand Champion in my division. I was pretty good. And we would go to tournaments three or four times in the season. And I would win these tournaments, and I would win what would be called no touch. Like, my opponent would never touch me. Like, I would score points. I was a lot younger and faster then. But my opponents would never touch me. I had quite a reputation going into the tournament. But one day, we went to a tournament. It was the New England Grand Championship. And we went to this tournament, and I was wearing a green belt. My opponent was wearing a black belt, and I was scared of him. His name, I remember everything. His name, when I tell you his name, you'll know I remembered it. The guy's name was Spider Chico. That was his name. And I'm like, how is his name intimidating? His name is even scary. His name is Spider. I gotta fight Spider Chico. And so for these tournaments, all the competitors would sit down in a circle, and Spider and I were on a collision course. We were the number one, he was the number one seed, I was the number two seed, and we were destroying our competition. And we were on a collision course. And I was terrified. Right before the match came up, my sensei, we're all sitting on the floor watching each other's matches, my sensei came crawling up behind me, and he's like, stop looking at him like that. I said, what? He said, stop looking at him like that. And I said, why? He said, because he's looking at you the same way when you fight. He said, when I crawl away, just give him a plain face look. And I said, huh? He said, just look at him really plain. As soon as he sits down. So I waited till Spider sat down, and I just kind of looked at him like this. And then, so then the match got called, the final match got called, and my sensei was standing in my eyesight, and he mouthed the words, he's afraid of you. Beat him. And I won. I beat Spider Chico. Yeah, I beat him. He broke my wrist and my nose in the fight, but I won. It was a real Karate Kid moment. And I cry at that moment for Daniel and the Karate Kid, if you know what I'm talking about. Sweep the leg. I was Daniel. If you don't get that joke, I love you anyway. But there was one moment for Peter that was like that. There was a moment for Peter that was like that. And I want to read it to you now. It's in Matthew 16. Matthew 16, starting in verse 13. I'm just going to go and read, and you can catch up with me, because I read slow anyway. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon Peter, Simon son of Jonah. For this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he warned his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. Peter had a moment that Jesus said, good, you got it. You got it right. I'm so proud of you. This is what's in your future. I'm so amazed at you. I'm so proud of you. You got it right. God spoke directly to you. I felt that way when I beat Spider Chico. But you know, after that, things didn't go so well for Peter. Right after that conversation, I have another story. So I had won the New England Grand Championship, and then So my sensei said, Daryl, you know what? That was a great fight. You broke your nose, but it wasn't no touch. I definitely got touched. He broke your nose. You got to heal up that wrist. But we're going to go to a full contact tournament. I want you to fight in a full contact tournament. He said, so we're going to start getting you ready for full contact. And I said, really? I thought I was so proud. I was like, really? He's like, yeah, so we'll start next week. We'll start getting ready for full contact. I was like, awesome. So I was about 19. And in my mind, I was a pretty good-looking 19-year-old guy. And to join our karate school, you had to come and watch two classes before you could join. So I started noticing that a bunch of girls started coming in to watch me spar with the class. I was a green belt, but I was sparring with the black belts, and since I was young and fast, I was beating all of the black belts in the class. Like my heroes, I was faster than them in this particular thing. And now, at one point, and I didn't marry this girl, I married Barbara, so at one point, this young woman started coming in to watch me on a regular basis. And when the secretary said, do you want to join the class? She said, no, I'm just here to watch Daryl. And I was like, woohoo, all right. And I can still see her. I thought she was the most beautiful girl until I met my wife. She had on some acid wash jeans and a white shirt that she would come in. She wore it every day, so maybe not that gorgeous. But this is what the girl wore to come to watch karate class. And I'd be waiting for her every Wednesday. Wednesday and Friday were our sparring night. So I'd be waiting for her. And sometimes she'd come early, and I'd go over and say hi. And sometimes she'd come late when class was already going, and I'd be waiting for her. So we're getting ready for this full contact tournament. And I had been sparring for a half an hour, beating up on all my classmates, just getting ready. I was in the prime of my life, getting ready for this full contact tournament. And then it was my turn to spar sensei. Sister girl hadn't come in yet, and I got to spar sensei. And I'm like, if only sister girl was here to see me spar sensei, I'm all set. She's going to love me. So, you know, in this tournament style that we were fighting, we would come to our marks, and you bow to your opponent, and then the referee would yell some loud Japanese word that was mispronounced through years of being in the hood, right? And then we would fight. So, sensei and I come up to the line, and I start to bow, but as I lower my head, my peripheral vision opens up, and I can see sister girl coming in. And I was like, this is so cool. I wonder if she's wearing those acid wash jeans. And so I kind of looked over there, and I confirmed that she was in, and she was wearing those acid wash jeans. And then I turned back, boom, right in my face, the hardest I've ever been punched in my life, harder than Spider Chico's punch that broke my nose. My nose was still healing. I fell back onto the dojo floor, and I was just stunned. I was like, this is a catastrophe. My nose hurts again. Sister girl sees my flaws, and I'm probably not ready for this tournament. And so within seconds, sensei crawled up to me again, but this time he crawled over me. And he's on all fours, and he puts his face this close to my face, and he says, never take your eyes off your opponent, Mr. Owens. And I just started crying. I just started bawling. I could feel the tears filling up my ears. I'm laying on my back. I could feel the tears filling up my ear. I was just weeping. But it wasn't the pain. It was pride leaving me. And he said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I think the laces from your gloves hit me in the eye and it stings. I lied. I was just embarrassed. So we go back to the changing room. When I got myself together, sister girl was gone. I never saw her again. That's right. I'm thankful. Don't feel sorry for me. I'm thankful. Never saw her again. But we got back to the changing room, and he talked to me about women and about sex and about attraction and about physical appearance being meaningless, but that I wanted a woman who loved me for me and who would love God. And I didn't hear it at the time. I was still mad at him for hitting me in my sore nose. But you know, Peter had that experience with Jesus. If we pick up the story back in verse 21, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to the disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he say, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned to Peter and said, get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Peter went from being this hero to being a zero, as a young man said to me last night, from hero to zero, right? But his mentor was not afraid to go there. In fact, if you're a mentor, you don't have time to wrestle with fear. I don't think Sensei said, should I punch Daryl in the nose right now? I wonder. Maybe get some advice. No, he knew that that was the thing I needed to snap me out of where I was going. You see, after Spider Chico, I was the top fighter in New England. I was the guy. And so Sensei knew that my attitude was out of control. I think that if Sensei had not punched me in the nose, I would have won the tournament. I lost the tournament the next day. I lost my first fight. I think that Sensei probably knew, had he not punched me in the face, that I would have won. But the lesson of the punch was better for my life. That's what mentors do. Mentors take a swing. And students take a punch. Mentors are going to mess up sometimes. I think in this day and age, if it wasn't in 1979 or, no, I was 19. I don't even remember when that was. I can't do the math right now. It was 30-something years ago, 35 years ago. What's the math? There you go. 85. It was 85. I think I would have probably gone on to be a big-time karate guy. I think that would have been my reputation. I think I probably would have dated and married and met sister girl and knew her actual name instead of just her clothing and what she looked like. Who knows what would have happened, but I know a couple of things that may not have happened. I may have been too arrogant by then to surrender my life to the cross. I may have been too stuck on myself and my looks and my ability to know when the woman that I was supposed to marry came along. I know that Sensei didn't know all this, but he knew he had to do something, and he took a punch. He took a swing, and he punched me hard. And to this day, it is the hardest I've ever been punched. And it is the best punch I've ever received in my life. It is the best. You know, so I kind of coincidentally, I lived my life in a parallel to Richard Scott's life. Richard Scott was a juvenile probation officer. I'm a police officer. Richard Scott married and had two daughters that he loves to this day. I married and have two daughters that I love to this day. Richard Scott lived his life going back to find children in the inner city to give life lessons to. I am damaged by what happened to my father. There is no doubt in my mind every day that I wake up, especially today, that I'm damaged and that my soul is impoverished. I am poor. My soul is impoverished, but I use it. I mine it to go and find young men and young women and say, come on, I got something to show you. There's a life beyond what you think. There's a life beyond your hood. There's a life beyond your gang. There's a life beyond your drugs. There's a life beyond sex. There is a life with Jesus out there, and there is a life of impact. You can have impact. Look at me. I tell them all the time, I am the best use of force instructor on the East Coast. I'm the best one. It's because I understand the other side deeply. I understand it. I've lived it. I got my feet in both families, the inner city community and the police community. I get it. And I tell my kids, I'm here to get you. Richard Scott was doing the same thing. Our lives are parallel. But then there was a point when I think he knew I had arrived. It's probably third on my list of best moments in my life. My baptism is number one. My marriage to Barbara and our family being molded and created to God, it's all one big memory for me, so I put them that all together. My family life. When I got my badge pinned on me, when I first walked into the police academy, I was like, this is crazy up in here. People are yelling at me. Nobody looks like me. Nobody's from where I'm from. They don't speak the same language I do. I'm lost. But I said, I'm going to finish this thing. I'm going to finish this. And when I was getting close to graduation, I made two phone calls. I called my mother, and I said, I'm really very grateful to you. I'm grateful that you were the kind of mom you were to raise me, but you're not pinning my badge. Sorry, Sensei's going to do it. And so this is the point, okay. So he's putting it on me, and he says, you're more than a student. You're my son. It was the best thing that someone who grew up without a dad could ever hear. Like, I wanted my father to do that. And I wanted my father to see that, but he couldn't. Because he made choices to live his life in a way that got him killed when he decided to turn around his life. The people that he was in his criminal enterprise with when he went to jail ended his life because he decided to leave it for us. And so he never got to see that his sacrifice of deciding to leave that enterprise, although he never quite did, paid off. But Sensei called me his son. And I was like, this is all I need. I didn't take off my I didn't take off my uniform for like 3 days. I just kind of walked around in the mirror. There was no cell phones, but if there was, I would have been like, I was so proud of myself. It's the biggest accomplishment of my life. You know, Peter, I think Peter gets a bad rap. I do. I love him. I love Peter because Peter is us. Peter is us. He's just flawed. And he says things too fast. And he does things too fast. And he cowers too quickly and extremely, like catastrophically. He cowered at the crucifixion. But Peter's us, man. Peter is us. I'm Peter. I love reading about him because I know the outcome of his life. I felt like I arrived when my badge got pinned on me. I arrived when Sensei was at my wedding. I arrived a few weeks ago when I did a graduation from my Teen Academy program, and the police commissioner comes and he puts his big hand on my heart like this. And he says, "You have the Spirit of God in you. I can see it." And I said, "You are right, sir. I do. And I'd love to tell you about that sometime." Here's when Peter arrived. Open to Acts chapter 2. I'm going to end here. I told you my memories are fresh, but, you know, that's just who I am. Sorry. I appreciate your tears. Even some big, tough dude who told me not to cry, I got him crying, so I like that. Then Peter stood up with the 11 in Acts chapter 2, verse 14, and raised his voice and addressed the crowd. "Fellow Jews, and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say." You know what Peter was doing right here? He was risking his life. Peter was risking his life. This is the same Peter, and I don't have time to read it to you, but who cowered at the crucifixion. He denied Jesus 3 times. He said, "I don't even know that dude." He ran. He lied. This is the same Peter, but his encounter with the resurrected Lord and his memory of everything that Jesus did caused him to risk his life on this day. "These men are not drunk as you suppose. It's only 9 a.m. No, this is what was spoken about by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions, and your old men will dream dreams." Peter's life was impacted by Jesus. Peter was transformed and changed by Jesus. Peter paid attention to Jesus' life and what he said. And on this day, Peter impacted all of us because he was no longer afraid and because his life had been impacted by a mentor. I'll leave you with this. The next time you see a young person who needs mentorship, pull them aside. Be sincere and say, "I want to spend time with you." Once a month, once a quarter, text on the phone, I don't know what it's going to be. Challenge yourself to give. And if you're a young person who someone comes to and says, "I want to spend time with you," hear the voice of God. He may be reaching out to you. That's my message for today. I hope it's encouraging. Thank you very much.